This is our first real episode of our new series, the Jew Function Videocast.
The whole of creation is really sex between the creator and creation.
All anti-Semites want to date Jews.
We're convinced that unity is the solution, okay?
But it's not working.
She's sometimes refers to herself as the seductress of Zion.
I'm frustrated. I feel so bitter.
Ariel, please show yourself.
The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality?
To explain Seductress of Zion, I was working at 70 Faces Media for a while, which is a Jewish media company in New York City. They do a lot of verticals, JTA, Kfeller, Nosher, Alma, etc. And while I was working there, I was building up what someone would call me a sex influencer Instagram account. So I would talk about sex studies and review sex toys and just really anything that had to do with human sexuality. So in May of 2020, when the pandemic broke out, and the IP conflict was 2021 May, the Israel-Palestine conflict.
That was 2020. I was already here. I was already getting rockets here when I...
Do you have a bomb shelter?
I'm in the bomb shelter. See, look, this is...
This is your bomb shelter? This is the sickest bomb shelter ever.
This is my bomb shelter. It's built it itself.
Actually, this episode is brought to you by... We were gonna plug the bomb shelter as our product placement, but we're gonna...
The bomb shelter.
So, So I left 70 Faces to be a sex influencer, like full time in quotes. And I ended up hosting a podcast called Balls Deep for this like feminist porn site, Balesa. That went on for a year. But in May of 2021, my personal Instagram account was deleted. There were a bunch of trolls who were reporting me for, I wasn't even really talking about Zionism. I was talking about the fear of anti-Semitism spiking because of the conflict. And so that account was deleted. And that's where I was, you know, it was just me and everything I do is through the lens of Judaism. And so I started using that sex influencer page called Horgasmic to be my general page. And so I started posting about Zionism there. And so far I've lost like 15,000 followers, I think. And now I've melded those two identities that I think I wasn't trying to keep apart, but up until last year, talking about my love for Israel and talking about politics, I suppose, or war, wasn't really important. So now that I am this seductress of Zion, and that, you know, people accuse Zionists of some people, like the Rolling Stones, of like that we have like, what is it? They say like the sexual politics of Zion, that we seduce people into supporting Israel and we'll put a spell on you and yada yada. So,
but listen, if it works, we should try it.
Oh, it works. I'm serious though. Like I get a lot of DMs from men who want to go out with me. And I always ask them, are you a Zionist, before answering any other questions? So now what's Zionism? That's usually what they say.
Do you have anti-Semites who want to date you also?
Oh yeah. I mean, all anti-Semites want to date Jews. It's, you know, they hate us so much that they want to marry, or they don't want to marry us, but they want to take out.
Talk about that. So we have part of one of the things that the first part of our podcast, all those 20 something episodes, was based on this pattern that we discovered that, that anti-Semitism comes. I also wrote a book about this particular thing, that anti-Semitism like pushes Jews together. When Jews are doing good and doing their thing, it's anti-Semitism kind of chills out. But when things aren't going well for us, then the anti-Semites kind of push. And also when you read the things that the not your street anti-Semite, but like the really intelligent ones, the Henry Fords, you know, there's a difference.
The smart ones, like a thug, the good kind
on the street who just wants to punch someone in the face. And then you have like the really intelligent ones. The really intelligent ones actually sound like the Jewish sages in certain weird things. Like these are a unique people. They have this, you know, when they don't do their thing, they turn into rats. But when they do their thing, they, you know, there's something unique and special about them. So what does it mean that when you said the anti-Semites really like the Jews, or what did you say?
No, just to on that point, we read this quote in one of the episodes by this Russian member of Duma from the early beginning of the 20th century, and he wrote a whole book titled "What We Don't Like About Them." That's like very straightforward. You don't have to write a whole Harry Potter book to say that you don't like Jews, right? So he said in the middle of that book where he just lists everything that he doesn't like about Jews, he says, let them rise to the height to which they apparently climbed in antiquity, and immediately all nations will rush to their feet. They will rush not by virtue of compulsion, but by free will, joyful in spirit, grateful and loving, including the Russians. We ourselves will request, give us Jewish rule, wise, benevolent, leading us to the good. Right? I mean, it's like this is like an anti-Semite writing this, right?
How does he arrive to that?
Because there was a time in history where people looked up to the Jews, and it was like what was going on in Jerusalem was like the World Woodstock Festival, right? People were coming in, and you can listen. I think it's called the Temple of Love. Temple Love, our episode. You should check it out. But the stories of what they describe was happening. That people coming from all over, and you needed a bed. Here's a bed. You needed an oven to cook your stuff. Here's an oven. You needed a sex toy. Here's a sex toy. Whatever you needed, it was all there. Like the Jews shared everything. It was this love that you couldn't even explain. People have that. And still today, when you look at Jews, we were always kind of the guys who were just get along with people. You know, we had this thing, right? Like around the Shabbat table, around the Seder table. It's like this little...
Right. We welcome the stranger. We are the light amongst the nations.
Exactly. So people know it. So that's why what we, you know, we claim that the solution to anti-Semitism lies in that, not in fighting the anti-Semites head on, because they feel what they feel. It's what they feel, you know. What are you going to tell them not to feel?
Our community.
Exactly. So now I can go back. What do you tell the anti-Semite that asks?
Well, why do they want to go out with me?
That's my first interesting question here.
Okay. Well, first of all, they don't really know what Zionism means. The first thought that comes in is that, I mean, to me, I didn't know about this, this era of love. And it does really sound Woodstocky, because we're all about welcoming the stranger. So yeah, sharing sex toys, like, sounds very on par with our values. But I think it's, you know, that the rest of the world, the Goyim, just became very jealous of us. They couldn't create anything as amazing. And I guess somewhere something's like changed in that Woodstock era, ended because someone wanted what we had. And so,
but hold on a sec. If you're feeling... Okay, well, finish the premise, then I'm gonna challenge you on that.
So I think that, I mean, the root of anti-Semitism to me is jealousy, wanting to have this community. You know, every time Jews have been oppressed, we have dug ourselves out and succeeded everywhere. I think that we are where Jewish culture is where it is today because of all of our oppression. And I think that really infuriates people. So then it just spun out of control, and people didn't remember why they didn't like us.
Someone who hates you or hates Jewish people want to date you?
They don't want to romance me. They want to fuck me.
Oh, they okay. Want well, this is different. To... This is, I mean, everyone wants to just do that all the time. So that's...
But then you would ask, like, why would somebody want to, like, put their penis in something that they despise. And okay, you could argue it's like a power thing. I don't know. I think a lot of people just don't even understand why they hate Jews. They just know that it's in vogue.
Okay, this is
and maybe it's cool to be like.
Well, go ahead, Sid. Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to go back to something. So first of all, that the people don't understand why. That's huge.
Yeah, we agree with wholeheartedly.
Yeah, completely. The people don't. It's almost like a natural thing. The other thing is that you know, the jealousy thing. First of all, I don't think the Jews are in a good state now. You know that we did dig ourselves out of everything, but we're still in a shit position and we're still in a bad place. This is not mm-hmm. a good. We didn't achieve some great situation. We're basically at the beginning of the next Holocaust right now. Like this is 1935. If you look at what's going on now, so.
I agree.
But when the concept that if we achieve this love, this connection, then everyone feels included. That's the success mm-hmm. of it. It's not like we achieve this love and everyone's on the outside looking at us having a great time and hating on us. The right. actual benefit, you know, they always say that we're supposed to be a light to the nation, or we're supposed to be, you know, we're like this connector between the creator and the rest of humanity, or something like that. And why is it that we're such a tiny, tiny, tiny piece? A tiny percentage, but we're in banking and law and medicine and entertainment and everything else, right? It's weird. So there's definitely a role here. So maybe to challenge that part, maybe like instead of being jealous that they're on the outside, maybe that for our part, if we're not spreading it to everyone, then that's why they hate us.
Basically, we're the world is like in a hospital bed connected to a ventilator, and we're standing on the pipe that goes from the ventilator to their lungs. So they're not jealous of us. They're simply, they need something, and we're sort of, you know, preventing that quality from reaching them. Maybe that's a different way of looking at it. And when you read everything that's written about the Jews, and when you read all of our texts, right? When you read our texts, not as a collection of historic tales, because they don't really add up as historic tales. When you read them as sort of like an internal allegory to a relationship between a person, his ego, his desire to receive pleasure and fulfill himself, and at the expense of everyone else, and you look at the struggle that you go through to overcome that, to connect to someone else above those natural egoistic feelings. When you look at that, and then suddenly everything that's written about Jews talks about their ability to accomplish that. That's mm-hmm. what they learned how to do. And that's what the world doesn't know how to do by itself. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that, it's not like, oh, Jews were special. Not special. Like I said, representatives from all other nations. We're simply, it's someone needed to do this role. So a group of people was selected, so to speak, and nature worked with them. You know, we're part of a system. It's like we give the example of, we didn't give that example. It's Bruce Lipton gave that example, but it gives the example of the caterpillar turning into a butterfly, right? And the caterpillar, you know, lives a certain lifestyle. He's all out there. He's eating. He's getting fat. You know, there's a lot of effort being invested in getting food and eating and digesting and growing and all of that. That whole lifestyle, right? Let's call it the material lifestyle, the capitalistic material lifestyle of the caterpillar. And then suddenly it stops. Everything stops. And it goes into this cocoon, right? And then inside the cocoon, some new cells called imaginal cells, they start to get, they get into action, and they help change the caterpillar from a caterpillar to a butterfly. Now imagine these cells were not doing it, but busy just doing their own stuff or fighting among themselves or getting some more of the resources in the, you know, and not actually making the caterpillar turn into a butterfly. You know, the rest of the cells would be angry. So this is, I think, a much more empowering way of looking at our role in society. It's like, yeah, we can actually do something. It's not about us warding off the attacks. It's about...
Well, right now it is.
Well, right now it is. It is.
I like the hospital bed metaphor analogy. I guess Seth, when you were talking about, you said earlier, like, we're spreading all this love. If not everyone is, if we're not doing that, not everyone then gets it. What the thought that I had was, well, okay, so maybe one person didn't want, I mean, a thought arose that maybe not everyone or one person wanted to have more than others. And if Jews are spreading this love, this light, then that wouldn't be possible. But as you both continued talking in the, with the analogy of the hospital bed, it's like, if that makes sense with the idea that we are the world's Bogart, like we are the imaginary nightmares and worst.
What does that, mean? I don't know what that,
Oh, a Bogart. It's, in Harry Potter, it's a demon. It's a villainous thing. And it usually lives in like a trunk or a closet. And if you open it, it will turn into the person who opened, who unleashed the Bogart's worst nightmare. So it, for me, it would be like, a rat. My apartment was infested with mice when I first moved in here. I was living with my, with two roommates before I moved here, infested for 2 months. And it drove me into I had like, I'm probably being dramatic, but PTSD, like I saw things moving and I was so afraid of these mice. Yeah, and yeah. I would just sit in my room and looking, inspecting everywhere. And I had this realization that I am anti-Semites. It was like living in Mouse and in the graphic novel. And I was like, I know that these mice are more afraid of me than I am of them. But for some inexplicable reason, I am terrified of them and I can't function properly anymore. And it was then that I understood what it really felt to be an anti-Semite.
What did it feel like to be an anti-Semite?
This, me living in my apartment with the mice, the hatred I had towards these little tiny things. Yeah. That were running away from me and I just wanted to kill them. And I'm setting glue traps everywhere. And I was going crazy and I was obsessing over them. I was entirely consumed by these creatures.
It was irrational.
It was irrational.
Well, it's not really that irrational. If you live in an apartment and it's overrun by mice, it's kind of not a good way to live.
No, no, but I think what she means is that it's in proportional to the actual. Okay, it's like a little vermin. But by the way, when was your? Did you ever experience like actual anti-Semitism against you outside of the digital world? Like maybe as a child?
No, I grew up in a Jewish bubble. I went to a Jewish day school,
bubble
camp. Yeah, I lived in northern New Jersey. I went, even in college, I was in a Jewish sorority, Greek Jewish Council. The worst that had ever happened to me was someone, we went to Newark Public School to play volleyball against them in middle school, and they threw coins at us. And that's my favorite form of anti-Semitism. Hadaka, thank you.
I mean, why throw dollars, not coins? I could tell, I listened to a few of your Torah portion commentaries, which were, yes. Some of them were hysterical, by the way.
Some of them weren't.
I only listened to some, but some parts were like,
and 86% really, of them were really funny.
So that's a high percentage. I appreciate it.
God was really, really angry, which means he was happy or something like, you know, in biblical terms, it means he was happy. But there was a lot of great lines in there, but you could tell that you like grew up like dipped in Jewishness, because I grew up in a I was one of the only Jews in my school. I did go to like an after school Hebrew school program, but it's not like in my bones, like all of the sources and all of that. It was clear that like you both that plus like your irreverence about it is like a really nice combination. But
they
could tell you were very dipped in it all.
Yeah, it's funny because I had rabbinics, Tanakh, Hebrew class. Not that Hebrew class is super important for this. Actually, no, it is, because reading Torah is different than speaking Hebrew today. But it helps a lot to be able to translate the Hebrew without looking at like a pre-written English translation, which is a lot of what I did when I was researching my scripts for And God Was Like, because if I was just looking, and I use Safari a lot. So mm-hmm. I really was only using the commentary of the rabbis that they provided with the English translation. But anyway, the translations sometimes are just very different, or the specific words that they're using to translate the Hebrew Torah didn't really carry, like it just didn't represent it as well. So that really helped me, I think, in some of the jokes and whatnot I made. But when I was in high school, middle school, I was pretty depressed. My parents were going through a divorce, latchkey kid, et cetera, whatever. So I wasn't really paying attention in most of my classes. And in rabbinics, mostly what I remember are the laws about leaving like a corner of your field for the homeless or the less fortunate to take home. And we just went over that so many times. But everything else I really didn't remember. So as I was doing the series, I was reading the Torah online every week and looking at all the commentary and basically re-educating myself. And I remember things here and there, and like Rashi, Rambam, those are actually probably the only two rabbis who we really studied. But yeah, I obviously have, I sat through those classes. Like I know the stories, but the commentaries is where it's really at. And I just didn't remember any of those things. So
Leo, Andrew, and I all know each other through studying the kind of inner meaning of the Torah. That's how we all met. The book on anti-Semitism also that we base the unity or anti-Semitism actually comes from that same wisdom as well. It's interesting that we have the Seductress of Zion, because in that study, the whole inner secrets of the Torah discusses from those people like Rambam, etc., the Kabbalists are called, that the whole of creation is really sex between the creator and creation. Like there's this male giving force, and all of reality is this female force. And it's called a zivug, a coupling. But the whole reality is just basically one big sex, one big sex. Yes. And the whole kind of purpose of us down here is to, you know, like he's one and his name one. It's like, it fits perfect. Like this for all of reality, specifically the humans, to make ourselves into this vessel that can actually receive the creator in a good way, I guess, you know, and the whole thing, you know, everything is just friction.
Just in simple words, if you want to enjoy that pleasure egoistically, just for yourself, then it breaks. It doesn't work. It doesn't last.
Right.
But if you want to, yeah, if everything,
like if you had a pleasure, lover who's just in it for himself, and then it just over real quick because he just.
Exactly.
Judaism is very sex positive.
It is.
And a lot of people DM me like, what do Jews and sex have to do with each other? Judaism. I'm like, what are you talking about? Be fruitful and multiply. Literally, God is talking about fucking the entire time, except for when, I guess, when they're having sex for idols, like the golden calf gate.
Golden calf gate.
Exactly.
On the topic of
because it was for themselves. Like they were just not having any of it while Moses was gone.
They lost their faith, their belief. Mom and dad left. Moses and God weren't heard from for 40 days. And I don't blame them. They're like, where are our parents, our guides? But that is an allegory that was important to the Torah as a whole.
The whole story revolves around this thing. You want the light to enter the vessel? No, not a problem. As long as the
a problem, that's the whole point of the whole game.
Yeah, exactly. The whole point is to enjoy, right? Is to enjoy this sexual union. But I do it for you. I do it to give you pleasure. And you do it to give me pleasure. And we do it to give pleasure to each other. And that's the greatest pleasure, because then we're equals, we're the same. It's like when you go to your mom and she makes you some food, and you know, you ate, you're stuffed, but you know, she worked hard to make that favorite bit of food that you know, so you're gonna take a few bites, right, to give her the pleasure, right? To show her, like, oh my God, moms, you remember my favorite dish, right? So it's that kind of, we see examples of that a little bit, but we just too wrapped up in ourselves. And my question to you, just on, exactly on that is, do you see examples around you in your life, wherever, of this, let's say, selfless, you know, pleasure or just this joy that comes from when everybody kind of gets together trying to take care of everyone else, not think of themselves for a moment?
I feel that in the past 2 years, I've become very bitter in seeing how no one really cares about Jewish safety except for Jews. And so I'm kind of pushed into my community. I was very active during BLM. I mean, I hate saying it like that. Everyone was doing it, so like I was active, but I think of myself as a good person, and Jews not being a monolith is, you know, we have people from every background, but I feel that it's just been a lot these past couple of years. And so when I thinking of these spaces where people do things for each other, in the Jewish community on Twitter, where if someone is being trolled, and it happened to me one time, no one really knew who I was online. Someone was trying to get me fired from a job that I didn't have anymore anyway. And the support that I got from people who were like, oh, I saw this person was attacking you, so I know you must be, you know, a good person if they're choosing you to attack. And it's just a selflessness in that, or not thinking about like what's in it for them, doing things for people without where am I seeing menches? Where am I seeing people do like mitzvahs?
Yeah. Like, is it even put another way? Are we even capable of doing it without the trolls? Like, would we be there for each other without the trolls? Would we be nice to one another? I was in New York, in 9/11, Seth and I talked about it, and a few weeks after, everybody was really super nice and caring and helpful. And if someone fell in the subway, you know, 10 people rushed to help them and all that. But you know, the years go by, you kind of forget that traumatic experience. Everybody goes back to being a bit of a dick, you know.
It's when there's a big tragedy. So I mean, the other thing I was thinking about is if someone dies or if someone's sick and people are talking about it on social media, obviously within the past 2 years, most of social interactions I see are online in the digital spaces. And on Twitter, people are very resourceful or flock to whoever is in need, who is in pain. And at the top of the recording, Seth, you both were saying this, but that, you know, what we're experiencing now feels like early Nazi Germany, like 1930s.
30s, yeah.
And what, Seth? Did you want to?
I was gonna say that's the whole thing that we're trying. We want to end this. Like, we want to be done with anti-Semitism. Like, we want. Like, can we bring that love, bring that support, bring that connection without needing? Because if we keep going right now, we are on our way. Like, Holocaust was dress rehearsal. The point is, we are headed into a very, very bad, with all of the technology and surveillance, and you know, if we don't unite, you know, we could be headed towards a really bad. All of the signs are pointing toward. I mean, we know what happens. Look through history, like Egypt, Rome, Greece, Persia, Babylon also, Spain, every time civilization hit a peak.
Yeah.
That's one of the stories in our Torah. Like, the greatest civilization also
anti-Semitic.
Tried to kill the Jews. The greatest civilization also, they tried to kill the Jews. So here we are today. And the question is for us, and we are humbly crowdsourcing and, you know, the seductress of Zion here to understand, can we unite without needing to, you know, can we unite proactively Or must we do only unite, like you said earlier, you know, we always rise from the ashes. Well, we will rise from, they won't be able to exterminate us completely. We'll rise again, but it will be really
bad. But can we avoid it? Can we,
yeah, the pain.
Can we not
why,
just
why?
Start from ground zero?
Yeah,
so and you're right. The Holocaust just being 75 years ago, the guilt that the world had for us expired like
a while like back in the 80s.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's a way to.
Oh my God. Let's close the podcast, Seth.
I'm young. I'm learning. I, like I said, was not paying attention in school. And so I'm a journalist.
Most of what they tried to teach you was lies anyway.
My mom would hate that. So right now I'm freaking out thinking that we're going to have another Holocaust. I'm online seeing I'm in the Jewish news space 24/7. And so I freak out to my three older siblings all the time. And they're like my rocks. They are my moral compass. And they tell me to calm down. Anti-Semitism has always been around. This isn't anything new. We have Israel now.
Don't calm down when we don't have Israel. So it's good.
So it's repetitive. They'd say this stuff to me and I'm like, okay, but you know, Hitler didn't have social media. Like, you know.
No, they're 100% right. It's repetitive. However, every time there's almost genocide. So like, yeah, we'll come back again after the next genocide, but there'll be a genocide.
So, but how can we, can you imagine this happening in America? Like that's what's been on my mind right now.
Think about Germany. It's exactly what the Jews said in Germany. We also have a chapter about this in our book as well. The Nazis tried to take, I mean, in our podcast to move the Jews out of Germany, but yeah, like, they wanted to close our businesses. Yeah, but listen, I have hot property. I have neighbors. Oh, they wanted to close. Then they started to prevent us from going to school. Well, yeah, but still, how could it be? I mean, we're in the movies here and we're in science here. We're professors at the university. I mean,
yeah, exactly it happened in all those spaces already. Yeah.
In every place, in Germany, in Rome, and in Greece, although always had Jews in all these high positions.
Let's switch gears because we talked about it a lot in the series, and one thing we can do is just encourage people to listen because I think it's pretty good. It lays it out pretty well. I want to know how we can use sex positive to unite the Jews. Let's talk tachlis. Seth and I want to bring more unity. We're convinced that unity is the solution. Okay. By the way, besides the podcast, I've had talks with anti-Semites, neo-Nazis. I talked to many people, and I have not seen one single solution that's systemic enough that really addresses the root problem and offers a solution. I saw, you know, little tactics, right? Oh, we'll sue them, or we'll ban them, or we'll start our own. You know, we'll start our own social network, whatever it is. But this is the only solution that's systemic, that kind of works hand in hand with what we see as the laws of nature. And we invite people to challenge us on it. We looked at big data. We looked at network science. It's all there. So we're pretty convinced that this is it. Now, the question is, how can we bring about that change of consciousness? How can we get Jews to unite? If it's the work you're doing, great. You have... I don't know, hundreds of thousands of followers. How can they? I'm projecting into the near future.
After this podcast, I once wrote an article called "Scott Disick is Good for the Jews." You guys know who Scott Disick is? Okay, he is Kim Kardashian's sister, Kourtney Kardashian's baby daddy.
Okay.
You guys know who the Kardashians are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Seth has got pictures of them.
I'm not under that big of a rock.
You don't know the Kardashians? Oh, you said I don't live under that big of a rock.
I don't live under that big of a rock.
Okay.
It's a pretty big rock.
I thought you said I do, and I fully believed it. So Scott grew up in Long Island. He's what you call a flit, a fucking Long Island douchebag. And he was the villain in the reality show for a while, but then he got his act together. And he was a villain because he was actually an alcoholic, and everyone was just mean to him instead of actually helping him. So that was really horrible to watch. But my point is, if you are acquainted with the Kardashians, to read an article headlined "Scott Disick is good for the Jews," it's kind of clickbaity because you're like, why, how the fuck is he good for the Jews? Right. And my argument is that he breadcrumbs his Judaism. I have a crush on Scott because he's handsome, he's attractive, he's sexy in more than just physical attributes, but his personality, and that he's a celebrity. Any celebrity is sexy, you know, just because of fame and money and notoriety and whatnot. So what Scott does is he breadcrumbs his Judaism, and that it's not a main focal point of his identity, but you'll see every here and again, he visits Israel and he takes like a douchey photo in front of the Kotel. And he's like, my homeland, or like the motherland, whatever.
This is the guy, just so we're clear. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yes.
Okay.
He's so cute. Well, he's my type, except he's a little.
I see. I want to see a douchey picture in front of the Kotel. Oh, there you go. Blessed by a rabbi.
Look at him with a shakshuka. Like, oh yeah.
Oh, look at. Oh, beautiful. My God. Seth, cover your eyes, Seth. This is too much. All right. Go on with the story.
So people know that he's Jewish, and the Kardashians, by the way, have an affinity for Jewish men. I think Pete Davidson is like a quarter Jewish and he's dating Kim right now, which is, I would say, good for the Jews. But anyway, before becoming the seductress of Zion, before branding myself really as that, I was breadcrumbing my Judaism on my Instagram page, Horgasmic. And right now, the non-Jews who have stayed with me because they followed me for the sex memes, and now, as they say, they stay for the, I wanted to say politics. It's not politics, though.
You need to write a good byline, like, they came for the sex, they stayed for the whatever.
For the whatever the freaking word is I want to say.
For the identity crisis.
That's good. Well, no, I'm not in a crisis. I'm in a
no, you're fine. It's the Jewish people who are in a crisis. That's
Oh, yeah, but not identity. Oh, no, actually we are. I mean, you know, yeah, we're in a big identity crisis. But that's all part of the friction, I think. We're always in an identity crisis.
Right.
We have the extremists on both sides and us in the middle. But anyway, my thesis, my idea is that we need to seduce by not necessarily sexual means, but by with confidence, charisma, have people, we need to be attractive to people in a sexual or platonic sense, get people hooked on us, and then breadcrumb our Judaism. And then they see that we're not evil brainwashing vermin, subhumans, or metahumans. But
what do we have to offer them, though?
As Jews, or as
Jews, yeah.
We're people.
We breadcrumb them, and then what? You know, like, just we have them over for dinner on Friday, or is there what do we have to offer?
When you make,
just trying to get people to like us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it sounds like, hey, Jews should just be fucking cool and popular and then reveal that you're Jewish. Not everyone possesses that quality. I don't think it's up to every single Jew to be societally cool. But I think that it's important to the Jews who are not visibly Jewish have the responsibility, I believe, to our community to be good for the Jews, in the sense that we are not a Shonda for Degoyim, that we seduce with our non, I mean, we seduce them when we don't look Jewish, And then we show them, we are Jewish. Oh, I feel like there is a technique to it.
So it's a sexy bait and switch, kind of like you say, hey, you fell in love with this person. Guess what? It's Jewish.
Yeah, but I don't. It can't be such a bait and switch. It's more like, oh, hey, yeah, I know this really cool guy. And then the Jewish identity is kind of a second thought. It's like, I don't love this person because he's Jewish, because they're Jewish, or because they're not.
But what's the difference between? But Ariel, what's the difference between that and anything? Like, oh my God, I loved him, and it turns out he's like an Arab. That's so cool. Like, what's the difference? Like, the question is there anything specifically unique about the Jew thing, or is it just like any people? We're just trying to get people to stop killing us, and that's the bottom line. Like, we're just trying to make it through the next 1,000 years without people killing us. Is that all we're trying to do, or do we have a mission here? That's what we're talking about.
I think
it's
beyond.
Just because our premise is that the mission is to bring love to the whole world. That is our goal. That is the mission of this people. That is what we want to do, is bring love and unity to everyone.
So we have to have sex with everybody.
Yeah, listen, I think I think, you know, you're right. What it means, I mean, physically it would be, there's not enough hours in the day, but to spiritually do it, or to somehow at least have that feeling of intense intimacy and intense connection and intense bonding with each other, that
we need to educate. We need more Torah education. There's
that book
no way.
Is very confusing for people, though. We need to do it in the correct way. I mean, that book is very confusing.
Look,
watch my show.
Yeah, exactly. No, for sure, they need to start with Ariel's show. I think that would be a good primer.
Unity of people begins.
So much to ask of an entire people to be the best, all be mentors. And that is how we were at a time, but we have devolved, and it's like we are, you know, God needs to wipe us out and restart again. How do we restart without restarting?
Leave God out of it for a second. I think I saw us another, you know, we kind of hung up on this guy. Leave him out of it for a second. Let's say that we don't need to do much. We feel like the need to constantly do, right? Like, I need to do, and you need to be a lawyer, you need to be a doctor, and all that stuff. There's like a lot of doing in the Jewish, right, being. I think if we would just do, and I'm asking you this, I'm not just saying it, I think mm-hmm. Is there a way that we could just maybe take a year off from trying so hard and just try to be caring for one another? Just nothing else. Not excel in anything, not be good with money, not any of the other stuff.
Impossible. Impossible that we're going to stop that. Maybe in addition to all that other stuff, we can try and be caring.
All right. In addition, but I'm just saying to start giving awards for that. You know, like, we have so many great awards for all that other kind of other types of.
It's not sexy, the way you're describing it. It needs to be.
Listen, that's why we turn to the sex expert, the sexfluencer, whatever you call the orgasmic seamstress.
Social media has ruined the opportunity to reach people's like neshamas. It's just, I want to be optimistic. I think.
But maybe that's part of the plan.
What's part of the plan?
So the social media, you know, ruined the connection to the soul, but maybe we don't need to enter through the soul. Maybe we could take the back door. No, maybe we can, like,
no, I believe you. Maybe, why keep doing this?
Because I'm trying to uphold my image and also have fun here. So, no, but, you know, listen, not everyone needed to invent the iPhone, but or mobile phone, but everyone can use it, right? Maybe we don't need every single person to be doing the soul work. Maybe we just need to, maybe that, through social media, once we have a good idea, you know, if you became the most popular person on social media, then everyone would just listen to you. You need to have the soul, and then everyone would just be influenced by that. You know, we don't need to make every single person do it right away. We just need a few people who can have that good influence.
I'll give it an even
13 people. No, 36 people. Is that what it is?
Yeah, no. No, but you need 10. Look, every big critical change in the world, you need a critical mass of about 10-11%. That's it. You don't need more people than that to actually affect
per community or the freaking world, because we're
any, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter the size. So America has 300 million people. Let's say half of them, you know, you have all people and kids and all that. You have, like, let's say 200 million people who are, so 20 million people need to change their mind. That's not a big number.
It spreads through the whole network.
Yeah, I mean, it's less number than people watching America Got Talent and other things like that, right? So it's not a huge number of people to get on our side. And what I'm saying, within the Jews, it's even less, because the Jews, there's only like 8 million in Israel, 8 million in the States, the ones we know of, right? So what are we talking about? Less than 1 million Jews actually thinking that, man, we want to prefer something else?
And that's, then it spreads through the network.
Just not impossible. Yeah, it's not impossible.
We need to start. The Jews need to get on the same page, except for the ones who are in charge of creating friction.
And leave them out of it for now.
Yeah, and the ones that are in the middle.
We just need the ones who can hear this message and who can start.
American Jews.
You're in America. I'm in Israel, by the way. Like I said, so you know, I'm looking at the situation here is not better. By the way, it's even maybe worse, the amount of disunity in this
country. You're living in fear of rockets all the time. Like, how?
No,
how
no, I'm not. Mean? No, I'm not living in fear of rockets. Believe me.
Well, you got your freaking awesome.
Fear of raising cottage cheese prices.
There. Yeah, exactly. it's not even that. I'm really trying to stress it. We just read something by this great
top
commentator. No, I'm actually referring to Baal Sulam, right? He's a great Kabbalist. He wrote the commentary in the Book of Zohar, and he wrote a few really great articles that people should read them, except he got buried by other Jews, obviously, because he didn't say what they wanted him to say. But at the end of this whole introduction to the Book of Zohar, because that was kind of like his life's work, so he writes this introduction, and at the end of it, he says, look, it's very simple. Everything has internality and externality, right? There's like an internal part, external part. It's pretty clear, right? Every story, every person, every group of people, there's always like what's happening on the inside, what's happening on the outside. All we have to do is prefer the internality to the externality. It's just it's a value thing, right? It's a psychological change. It's not complicated. Just let's prefer this, what we have now, between us. Like, we barely know you, but we already like you, you know?
I seduced you.
Exactly. But we like that, you know? We like the fact, I feel comfortable that now after this talk, maybe if I come to New York to Clinton Hill and I knock on your door, you know, I can come in, we can have coffee, you know, it's fine. We will have this kind of connection, right? If we prefer that over the external part of it, like, what people are doing, how much money they're making, what are they doing around the world? Let's just prefer that over the external stuff.
Prefer the connection over everything else. And then it really does it, the outside covering of what everyone's doing, it doesn't really matter as much for the time being, because that'll all sort itself out if we all care about each other.
How the fuck do you think that's going to happen now? That's a beautiful idea.
It's not an idea. It's a law of nature. We understand that we are egoists. You're an egoist, Seth is an egoist, I'm an egoist. Society is a group of egoists who live together because we somehow can manage to fulfill, you know, we have some mutual interests, right, that we can get, you know, profit from. We're all egoists. So we say, yes, we're egoists. We're going to, above that egoism, we're going to make efforts to love each other. Isn't this what you do in a marriage? You what do you do in a Jewish marriage? You start with a broken plate, right? And then you have all your life to put it back together. So it's not like, oh, first you fall in love, first you get to know someone. No, that's babkes, because you're in no position to judge what's actually happening in the other person's heart. If you start the relationship saying,
inner commentary on the whole
time, yeah, if you start the relationship saying we're both egoists, there's no need to reveal anything. I know you're a terrible person. I'm a terrible person. Now let's build something above that. Let's prefer something more powerful. That will be love. That will be not anything else. That will be the definition of love. It will be a choice that you make, not some hormonal thing you pursue.
So is the idea to have you know, more, or what is the proposal from both of you to have more leaders who are spreading this message of love?
Love above the friction. Yes.
Yes. Stay who you are. I mean,
isn't that what rabbis are supposed to be for us?
Oh, hey, listen, everybody's supposed to, but
no, we're leaving religion on the side. We're really, this is open for anybody. Everyone stay who you are in the meantime, unless you're like killing for a living, you know, but besides that,
try to do less of that for a while.
Stay who you are. You're a bacon salesman, you know, whatever you are, it doesn't matter. The first thing we need to do is love each other as ourselves. That's
like, or at least talk about
whole
it.
Premise.
Or at least talk about it, you know? Just let's
don't
let's,
change your outer world yet. Like, just leave everyone alone. Just first things first, just try and start to care about each other. That's the premise of what
we also have to learn how to care about ourselves. It's really, I think so many people hate themselves today. It's difficult to love society when you fucking hate yourself and you feel that you're in competition, that you're worse, and social media makes all that worse. I think everyone needs to be in therapy.
But watch this. Ariel, you're beautiful. You're smart. You're funny. You're great to hang out with. We should meet again. Like, you know, when you're around people and they start, you know, do it, like all of a sudden you start to feel better. You know, Leo, you're so handsome. You're so cute. Spiritual, Leo.
Keep it coming,
sir. No, Leo, really, you're probably the most spiritual person I know. And every time I hang out with you, we have such a great time.
No, you're so,
you know,
funny.
Like, all of that years of like regression therapy, if you're just hanging out with people who are loving on you all the time.
Complimenting you.
It's like, I don't need to go back to what, you know, someone said to me in second grade, which made me, you know, once you're around this good environment, I start to feel totally different about myself.
But how do you get in that environment? A lot of people found themselves.
You find those who want to do it. That's the first thing.
Okay, right. We're narrowing down.
Yeah. Start with those who want to do it. Don't go against some Nazi who, you know, no. Find a Jew who's, you know, a little less interested in themselves and have some outlook on like, wait, how do we make this better? Oh, let's first create a little circle where we make each other feel great and loved between us. Oh, amazing. Then we do that. Okay, let's expand the circle. Then let's expand that circle. That's how you do it. It's so easy.
You know, a handful of Jewish friends I have who I think live their life in that way to be, to be a light amongst the nations, they have identity crises in their Judaism, and that they reject. I mean, I think that anyone who's an anti-Zionist is rejecting. They've internalized anti-Semitism. And so those people who desperately want to please everyone else are actually some of the kindest people I know, but they hate themselves. They hate that part of themselves that the world hates.
You said it so beautifully. It's a defense mechanism. Like, if the world wants, you know, human rights, I'll be the most righteous human rights activist that can be, even if it means going against my own people. That's fine. Put me against the wall. Mm-hmm. That's, I want to show you how righteous I am. But here's the secret, as Seth and I covered in the podcast, we've done it time and again. It doesn't work. It does not work. We always go that route and we always get the backlash.
We try and assimilate.
Yeah, remember the Million Women March? Remember that thing that started when Trump was announced his nomination? Who was there? A black woman, a Latina woman, Linda Sarsour, and a Jewish woman. What happened 3 months after they started? They all ganged up against the Jew. And she left. She started her own 500,000 Women March or whatever.
Yeah, I know. Of course, it doesn't work.
So we have to start with our
a cool Jewish leader conference. I mean, so many of the initiatives that we, as a community, start, Jewish youth groups, Jewish summer camps, every single Jewish community. I guess are you suggesting utilizing social media to its advantage in having influencers? I suppose like me, even though I'm losing, well, it doesn't matter. My target audience are Jews. That's my target audience.
Here's what we're saying. We don't have exactly how it will be implemented. We don't know, because you are in social media. You could get hundreds of thousands, millions of people. You know, you find someone else who's in technology. It doesn't matter. What we want to talk about together is how do we unite? And the way that nature evolves, the way the system evolves, Ariel comes into the circle. Somebody else comes into the circle. So nature, you know, you have a man and a woman. They can copulate, but to make a baby, you need the force of nature in there. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of friction and pleasure, but you don't have a life. So we come together and unite, but then there's also this other force, this creative force, which we didn't really talk about at all, but that also has been moving through all of history, developing reality from plants to animals to people. You know, we were monkeys a couple hundred thousand years ago, just pushing this whole development along. So our part of the work is to be like the white and the red, the mom and the dad, and then the creator. You know, what does it say, Aaliyah? What's the expression, like the man and the woman and the creator in between, or something like
the
that?
Man and the woman. We just need to do our part.
We need to bring the our part and come together. Nature, the force of creation, the creator will finish the job. We'll make it all happen. We just need to unite. How you're going to figure out the technology, the social media, or someone else going to figure out the music and the food is you know, that's just that's
the details. Part.
Our Don't main work, it. Our main premise is not to say we need to set up a social media account. We need to make a festival. The first thing we need to do is come together and unite. How it will manifest itself, you know, that is what we're all going to discover together.
We are prophets.
We are the people of the idea. We were founded around an ideology. We're not an ethnic group. We're not a race. We're not a biological clan that expanded over the years. No, we're a hodgepodge of people united around an idea. That's the idea we were united around. Jew from the word Yehudi, Yichud, Yachad. That's the source. So either we own up to this idea and we start to make that the most important thing, or we close shop and we just hand ourselves to the authorities and we be done with it. But look, we have to finish. But I think what I'm feeling is that we should meet again. You know, we should cheat each other more often.
I feel like I'm a 5-year-old trying to understand a math equation, and I know it's not a math equation really. It's I don't know. I'm frustrated. I feel so bitter, and you guys are like, no, just like, yeah, like love, like kulanu beyacha, and I'm like, but it's not working.
No, because we don't know how to.
I also feel that as well, Ariel.
Yeah. We're like 6-year-olds. You're 5 or 6. We're going to make it work. We just don't have to just not think about it so hard. Just focus more on, let's just talk about the idea and try to make it important in our lives. Even when it gets annoying and boring and whatever, make that number one. And let's talk again in a while and see where we are, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would love to be frustrated a little more with you guys. And I just want to say, if anyone is listening to this episode from following me, I really do suggest binging the entire, the first season of the podcast. This is now the video series.
Yeah.
The music is really cool. The ideas are wild and, it's funny and very informative, and I think you guys are doing really, really amazing work. And I also, you on Twitter, very funny. We've been interacting for a little bit. So I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. It was a lot of fun. And
same here.
Whether we record this again or just have like a little chavruta, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's it. You're in our circle. We'll
Woo! Likewise.
Just keep growing it. Amazing. So that is it, everyone. Check out Ariel's stuff. We'll have all the links in the in the description, and you can check her weekly portion. It's phenomenal, and all the other stuff that she's doing, all the great advice you can get in the other department. Do that, and also, of course, follow us, like us, comment, subscribe, hit the bell, all that stuff that you do on YouTube. And we'll see each other again next week. Thank you, Ariel, Seth. This is the Jew Function.
Thank you, Mario.
Take care.